I see.
I won't leave, Peterson said.
I'm grateful for your concern, but I shall make you leave. You're our next chief of police. For the town's sake, nothing must stand in the way of that.
That's crazy.
No, it's how good decisions are made. One must take oneself out of the equation.
I can't do it.
A deal is a deal, even if Chief Holland didn't stick to his with me.
I won't go.
You will.
The United States Air Force security forces were headquartered at Lackland Air Force Base in Texas. They had no direct equivalent of the Army's MP Corps 110th Special Unit. The closest they came was the Phoenix Raven program, which was an integrated set of specialized teams. One of those teams was led by a guy who had just gotten off the phone with Susan Turner in Virginia, and who had just gotten back on the phone with a file clerk 1,000 miles away in a records depository. The clerk said,
"What I gave you is all I have."
Too vague.
It is what it is.
There has got to be more.
There isn't.
How hard have you looked?
Staring at a piece of paper won't make words appear on it.
Where did the delivery originate?
You want me to trace one particular cargo flight from 50 years ago?
Can you?
Not a hope. I'm sorry, Major, but we're talking ancient history here. You might as well ask me what Neanderthal man had for lunch 1,000,000 years ago last Thursday.
By 7:50, Janet Salter's house had gone absolutely silent. Some kind of drumbeat of dread had passed between one inhabitant and the next. The cop in the hallway had gotten up off the bottom stair and was standing behind the door. The cop in the library had stepped closer to the window. Peterson was watching the street. Janet Salter was straightening books on the parlor shelves. She was butting their spines into line, small, nervous, exact movements with the knuckles of her right hand. Reacher was lounging in a chair, eyes closed. Nothing could happen before the siren sounded. The clock ticked on. 7:55 in the evening. 8 hours to go. Chapter 31. The clock in Reacher's head hit 8 exactly. Nothing happened. The world outside stayed icy and quiet. Nothing to hear except the sound of the wind and the brush and rattle of frozen evergreens and the creaking and stirring of tree limbs and the primeval tectonic shutters as the earth itself got colder. 8:01. Nothing happened. 8:02. Nothing happened. No sound, no siren, no one came. Peterson glanced at Reacher. Reacher shrugged. Janet Salter looked out the window. No action on the street. The cop in the hallway moved. Reacher heard the boards creak under her feet. 8:03. Nothing happened. 4:05. 6:07. Nothing happened. No sound, no siren, nothing at all. At 8:15, they gave it up and stopped worrying. Peterson was certain the headcount could not have been delayed. Prisons ran on strict routines. If the cells weren't locked for the night at 8:00, there would be entries to be made in operational logs, and reports to be filed in triplicate and supervisors called upon to explain. Way too much trouble for any reason short of a riot in progress. And if a riot was in progress, the siren would have sounded anyway. Therefore, the bid had failed, or the lawyer had been blowing smoke. All clear.
You sure?
Reacher asked.
Absolutely, Peterson said.
So prove it. Put your money where your mouth is.
How?
Go home. And Peterson did. He spun it out until 20 past, and then he put his coat on and crunched down the driveway and climbed in his car and drove away. Janet Salter stopped straightening books and started reading one instead. The cop in the hallway went back to her perch on the bottom stair. The cop in the library stepped back from the glass. Reacher sat in the kitchen and tried to decide whether to disturb Janet Salter by asking permission, or whether just to go ahead and make more coffee himself. He knew how to work a percolator. His mother had had one, even though she was French. In the end, he went ahead and fired it up unbidden. He listened to it gulp and hiss, and when it quieted down, he poured himself a mug. He raised it in a mock salute to his reflection in the window and took a sip. At 8:30, the phone rang in the hallway. The cop got up from the bottom stair and answered it. It was for Reacher, the voice from Virginia. The cop put two forked fingers under her eyes and then pointed them at the door. "You watch the front, and I'll give you some privacy." Reacher nodded and sat down and picked up the phone. The voice said,
40 tons of surplus aircrew requirements left over from World War II.
That's vague.
Tell me about it. My guy did his best for me, but that's all he knows.
What kind of surpluses did they have after World War II?
Are you kidding? All kinds of things. The atom bomb changed everything. They went from having lots of planes carrying small bombs to a few planes carrying big bombs. They could have had 40 spare tons of pilots' underwear alone. Plus, they changed from prop planes to jets. They got helmets. It could be 40 tons of those old-style leather hats.
Wish I had one of those right now.
Quit whining.
What's the temperature here? A pause.
Minus 14 degrees.
Feels worse.
It's going to get worse. The Weather Channel radar looks horrible.
Thanks for sharing.
Hey, you asked.
Hats and underwear.
Got to be something to do with a generational change of equipment, or a reduced number of air crew, or both.
Anything on the size or architecture of the place itself?
That stuff was lost a long time ago.
Okay, Reacher said. Thanks.
My guy talked from Fort Hood, like you said he would.
I'm glad.
I owe you.
Nah, we're even.
No, I do. It's my first major score.
Really? How long have you been in the job?